The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
Darkness has settled into Montgomery in more ways than one. And just before Christmas, how nice. Meanwhile, the chief continues to pursue his prey, unaware that Devin has become... well, meanwhile, our detectives make haste from the sanitarium in hope of picking up Devin's trail. It's a shame it's gone cold. Dead cold! Speaking of cold, it's time to light those candles. Dim the lights while cuddling under your favorite blankie. Oh, don't forget the plushies. I prefer tentacle ones myself. A brief reminder, this podcast does contain graphic violence, child endangerment, and, of course, my favorite, naughty, salty language. Now, let us begin on this Tentacle Tuesday. Chapter 6, The Trail Goes Cold.
Chief Reynolds climbed the stone steps in front of the town hall. Like the precinct, an A-frame roof hung over a stone porch. On each side, two small blue spruce trees grew in large stone pots. Currently, they were decked out in orange and black lights. Although Halloween had passed and it was late November, the mayor forbade them from switching to Christmas. It was too soon. It was one of the mayor's pet peeves. He would often argue with his staff,
"Not until Santa's fat ass crosses the end of the holiday parade. And then you can go all out. In my town, we still celebrate Thanksgiving. Fuck the retailers."
That would be this Friday, and he was sure Agnes Cromwell would be here extra early just to make sure it happened. He looked over at the two gas lanterns that hung on each door. The shadows each cast were fitting for a horror movie. He half expected something to reach out and snatch him as he neared the doors. Grabbing the iron handle, he pulled them open and headed inside. The marble foyer gleamed from the chandelier, lighting a solitary desk where the receptionist sat. His steps clacked and echoed across the empty foyer, but the receptionist still didn't look up from her Home and Gardens magazine. "Evening, Agnes," the chief said.
"Chief!"
she exclaimed, nearly jumping out of her skin, as the earbud pulled out of one ear and onto the desk. He could hear Bing Crosby singing White Christmas.
"I wasn't expecting you,"
she said as she scrambled to look more professional. "That's okay," he replied. "I called on a private line."
"Oh, so you're expected?"
Agnes asked, raising an eyebrow. A voice behind her confirmed that suspicion.
"Come on in, Chief."
It was Mayor Simmons.
"Agnes, go ahead and shut down for the night," he said. "The chief and I have some important details to go over, and I suspect we'll be here past hours."
"You sure? Do you need me to pull any files?"
This had to be something big for the chief to sneak in this way.
No, it's okay. Just be safe going home."
"Damn," she thought as she grabbed her coat.
"Night, chief. Good night, Jim."
Putting on her jacket and tossing a frosty scarf around her neck, this was another part of her little rebellion. If it was up to her, Christmas would be up November 1st and down January 6th. As she walked, the two men could hear the jingle bells until they finally faded as she pushed her way outside. "I think she's trying to tell you something," the chief mused.
"Yeah, those damn jingle bells," he laughed. "Every time she moves. Anyway, what's up, chief?"
the mayor asked, finally getting down to business. The two men walked down the hall, past the mayor's office and towards the library and archive room.
"Did you pull the old maps from 30 years ago?"
"Yeah, from Will's Folly,"
the mayor said, raising an eyebrow. "If I'm right, before he laid those foundations, chief, I believe he had already constructed several sewer lines."
"Let's have a look,"
the mayor said, and the two men went down into the archive room.
"Out of curiosity," Mayor Simmons asked, "why are you being so hush-hush with this?"
"We ID'd the girl last night," he answered.
"Oh, who?"
the mayor asked.
"Casey Monroe."
"What? Why haven't I been..."
the mayor started, but the chief cut him off.
"Because they're dead too, Jim."
The mayor shot him a look of disbelief.
"And you really think Devin had his hand in all this?
Hand, body, foot. He's...
I don't even know what he is, the chief replied. He had never seen such a horrible act. Such a demonic attack. To him, Devin was no longer a man.
Okay, I understand. But why the sewer maps? Mayor Simmons asked.
I think he may be using them to avoid capture and to scout out his next targets, Chief Reynolds replied. The mayor with a grim look.
I would never have thought of that.
I wouldn't have either, except that within 24 hours we got a call about a monster near the old cemetery. And then, again, on Bethel. No one could just pop up without someone noticing.
Yes, and it's hunting season, the mayor said thoughtfully. Look, Chief, I'll give you whatever resources you need.
Thanks. I've already gambled on that. I have about 100 men combing Bethel Street right now.
Bethel? There's a lot of young families there.
Exactly. The two men combed over the pages, and Chief Reynolds compared them to his current map. Okay, this should do, Jim. Thanks.
Not to sound like a callous politician. Any chance you'll have them by Thursday? With the holiday parade? Christmas starting off?
The mayor asked. The chief could see that he was embarrassed to do so. He did really care what happened, but he could also understand the political aspects of all this.
I'd sure like to promise that.
We have a good chance, he added.
Good, good. I may not like to start the season early, but I do love it, and would hate to have such an evil presence hanging over it.
Same, Jim, same. The two detectives left the sanitarium feeling very uneasy, even though they agreed with the doctor the way Casey had looked at them. Night was now falling on Montgomery, another night where Devin roamed free. So where do we go from here? Jay asked.
I was wondering that myself, Warren replied. What time is it?
5:45. Why?
Karen's last appointment isn't until 6, Warren said. No, it's late, but I want to go back to the cottage.
Count me in.
What about going home to Little Miss Susie? Warren asked in a bemused tone.
And to that wonderful cooking, Jay responded.
She'll live, and thankfully, now that I'll be late, so will I.
You're a mean man, Jay, Warren laughed.
You say that, Jay scowled, but that woman can burn even water, Warren.
Maybe, Jay, but she does truly adore you. Jay smiled at that. Warren was right. Susie made him a very happy man. Jay redirected the car, and they headed towards Sims Divide. The road was dark, making it slow for travel. The trees hung over a single-lane road, and the car bounced and jolted every 15 feet or so. Finally, they pulled up to the cottage. Turning on their flashlights, the two men both made their way towards the large oak door.
By the size of it, Jay remarked, you'd think that your grandfather was friends with the giant.
Warren himself eyed the entrance strangely, the images of feathers once again filling his head, and a soft voice.
May I give you a gift?
Jay nudged him.
Are you okay?
Yeah, fine. Let's go. The two men entered, and instead of a hurricane lantern, the flashlights illuminated the quaint living room.
Do you smell that?
Warren asked.
Yeah. It smells like beef stew.
Yeah,
beef stew. Or at least that's what it reminds me of.
Same, Warren replied.
Kitchen? Jay suggested.
Kitchen, Warren agreed. They made their way into the kitchen, and it was clear someone had been using it. Scraps of vegetables in the garbage, and a neatly washed bowl and spoon by the sink on a small hand towel.
Well, I can't imagine this was Devin.
No, I agree. The question now becomes, who? Warren thought of the image he saw earlier, the man in the brown cloak with the crow on his shoulder. Then again, on the walkway to the sanitarium, could he be more than Warren's overtired imagination?
I'm going to head back outside and see if I can find any tracks or trace, Jay said.
Sounds good, Warren replied. I'll check out the bedrooms. As he headed down the hall, images began to fill his head. Flashes of people, flashes of things. Once again, he swooned.
Warren,
a voice called out to him. Holding onto the wall, he pushed his way closer to the bedrooms.
Warren,
the pressure he felt built, as if someone was pushing him down, holding him from moving further or closer.
Why? What was this all about?
Warren! He heard someone call. It wasn't the soft voice this time. It was louder, concerned.
Warren, hey, you okay?
It was Jay. He turned, looked at him, and said,
Jay?
Then everything blacked out. Where he was after that, he wasn't sure. It was a large black void. No light, no stars, no sounds. The darkness seemed to ripple, like water as he moved through it. It puzzled him. How could he see? Being there was no light, and yet everything seemed to have a silver sheen to it. He continued to walk forward. He could hear voices, strange voices. In the darkness, he could make out trees and a path. As he walked along, he passed several lanterns until finally he saw someone sitting at a picnic table. Was that Grandpa Jack? No, someone else. He approached with caution. The man's face was young, about the same age as himself. A scar ran down from under his left eye and onto his cheek. His eyes glowed, almost a purple, amorous color. They were sad, older, much older than the man's face. He looked up at Warren, and it appeared he was trying to say something to him. Warren closed his eyes, trying to hear what the man was saying, but heard nothing. He opened them again to see the man pointing, as if to guide him. "I don't understand," Warren called out to the man, and his voice carried into the nothingness, and the man and the image were gone. He found himself now being shoulder-carried by Jay. Jay, seeing he was awake, reassured him.
"Don't worry, partner, I've got you," Jay said. "Where am I? What happened?"
Warren said in a scratchy voice. He slid Warren onto the ground just feet away from the Crown Victoria.
"We're still up at Sims Divide. You passed out,"
and then he added, "Honestly, you still look peaked." Warren did his best to sit up and rolled over onto his knees so he could stand up and found he couldn't. Jay opened the passenger door and lifted Warren into the car. Warren seemed to be falling in and out of consciousness. He picked up the radio and called dispatch.
"This is Squad 23. Officer in distress. En route to St. Teresa's."
"Copy, Squad 23. Do you need assistance?"
"A few Hail Marys would be nice." Jay turned on the lights and siren and raced off. He looked over at his partner, who was twisting and turning as if in a walking nightmare.
"I'm not a praying man, but Aldone, please."
"A detective sways in and out of consciousness. Why? What is wrong? And who is he seeing in this nightmare realm? Meanwhile, the chief continues to pursue Devon, not knowing he's gone. Long gone." "As the holidays approach and winter settles in, we move on in our little story to Chapter 7. Ben Cullen."